हरे 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 बोलो. So now I think we're on like number 12 or 13 on this topic, which seems like you can't really easily get to the end of it because there's so much to talk about and there's so much interest in it. So we're going to keep talking about it. And we want to welcome all the regulars and newcomers who are joining us. Those of you who would like to, you can join chat. Underneath where you see me speaking, there's a box. If you click that box, that can bring you into chat and it will direct you to do a few things and get you there. So, for the last 2 weeks, we've been talking, or 3 weeks, we've been talking about protection, particularly protection of women. And we were reading from a paper which I hadn't read from in the last 2 weeks because we had a lot of discussion. And I want to return to that paper. It's the same topic of protecting women. And if you have any questions, if you have any comments, please, you can churn the ocean of nectar, churn the ocean of discussion. So Manjesh is here, and Bhakta Patrick is here, and I am here, and Karuna Shakti is here, and who knows who else is here who hasn't yet let us know that they're here. So the section of this, excuse me, this section of this article by Urmila Devadasi is entitled, What is Protection? And she answers the question by saying, it is a sense of being loved and cherished. Everyone wants to be loved. So when we say women want to be protected, if we change the word to love and cherish, then obviously no one will argue with that. As we said, women want to be loved, and men want to be what? Who remembers? Anybody? What do men want? Even more than love, what do men want? They want respect. Actually, the woman must always be protected by her husband. We always speak of the goddess of fortune as being placed on the chest of Narayana. In other words, the wife must remain embraced by her husband. Thus, she becomes beloved and well protected. Just as one saves his money and places it under his own personal protection, one should similarly protect his wife by his own personal supervision. Just as intelligence is always within the heart, so a beloved chaste wife should always have her place on the chest of a good husband. This is the proper relationship between husband and wife. A wife is therefore called Ardha-Gani, or half of the body. One cannot remain with only one leg, one hand, or only one side of the body. He must have two sides. Similarly, according to nature's way, husband and wife should live together. This is from the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's from a purport by Srila Prabhupada. So he's making this analogy, or the Shastra is making this analogy, that the husband and the wife are one body together. And just as you would take care of your body, so the other half of the husband's body is the wife's body. So therefore, it's natural and it is his duty to take care of that other half of the body. And the woman enjoys very much being taken care of by such a loving husband. Now, problem is sometimes husbands are not good at taking care of their wives, or they're negligent, and that causes all kinds of problems. And then the woman is forced to either separate or in some way fend for herself, take care of herself, and generally she's not happy doing that. It's not really natural for her. And as we had discussed, that particularly if she's pregnant or if she has children, it's extremely difficult to take care of her children or to be in that situation without the protection of a husband and or family. So here's a lecture from Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes we receive the complaint in foreign countries. They say that you keep your women like slaves. I replied, we do not keep our women as slaves. They're very respectful at home. The sons offer their highest respect to the mother. The husband gives the topmost protection to the wife. So, you know, if you say women should remain subordinate or submissive, protected by the husband, then people get this idea that that basically means slavery, there's no freedom. And, you know, people have issues with that. And that's why you had this whole woman's liberation movement. So Prabhupada's nicely explaining here that women, at least within our culture, or Krishna conscious culture, or Vedic culture, were highly respected. The mother figure is highly respected. Because the mother is the first guru, so the mother is respected like guru, and the husband also respects the wife as Devi, or goddess. So he protects the goddess, and he sees her as a goddess in his life. So it's a very nice relationship. And slavery, interestingly enough, slavery is actually symptomatic, you could say, or a byproduct of love, because we become controlled by love, or we become the slave of love. So you see that when you love somebody, you'll do anything for them. So in a sense, you've become like that person's slave voluntarily out of love. So there is a positive side to slavery when it is willful, when slavery is enacted because of your own desire or your own attraction to that person. So we become slaves of love. So you could say that, yes, a protected wife becomes like a slave out of affection. She wants to please her husband, who is so kind to her. And we have this divine conception of slavery, to become Krishna's slave. That's the highest position, to become an instrument of Krishna's pleasure. So there is positive connotations to the word slavery when we understand it from the point of voluntary action based on affection. Just like parents become like slaves to their children out of affection. They'll do anything for their children. They would die for their children. They're working, men and mothers and fathers are working to support their children, to give the best to their children. So in a sense, it's a kind of slavery. But it's not felt that way. It feels as if I am acting only out of love. But so the love becomes the binding force. So we're bound by love. So a wife can be bound by love to act as a so-called slave, as a so-called submissive servant. But she doesn't feel like a slave. But when she's not acting out of love, or because the husband is not worthy of love, then she might feel like a slave that she has to serve him. So really, we could say slavery is really the absence of love. That's when you feel slavery. You never feel slavery towards something you love. You only feel it towards something you don't love. Okay. We want to welcome ISKCON. ISKCON has appeared. His personified ISKCON has appeared tonight. That's amazing. I didn't know ISKCON had a form, but I guess ISKCON has a form, and he's appeared on chat. Okay. Now, the next question which we're asking is, why do women need protection? Because some women might take offense at the connotation or the idea that they need protection. That would make them second class, subordinate to men, less than men. And as we said, it seems that men also need protection, and the wives offer that kind of protection. So yes, It is true. We can say we all need protection. But specifically, here we're discussing kind of protection women need. So what is that? Let's read. Women are self-interested by nature, and therefore they should be protected by all means so that their natural inclination to be too self-interested will not be manifested. Okay, that's a heavy statement. I don't know if all women will agree that they're more self-interested than men in general. Where's Bhakti and Carol? Bhakti and Carol's not with us because she would likely question that, perhaps. Women need to be protected by men. A woman should be cared for by her father in her childhood, by her husband in her youth, and by her grown sons in her old age. Women must be cared for so that they will not be free to manifest their natural tendency for gross selfishness. This is not a criticism of women, but a practical study of their nature. Such natural instincts of a woman or a man are manifested only in the bodily conception of life. When either a man or a woman is advanced in spiritual consciousness, the bodily conception of life practically vanishes. We should see all women as spiritual units, aham brahmasmi, whose only duty is to satisfy Krishna. Then the influences of the different modes of nature which result from one's possessing a material body will not act. A lot of times, Prabhupada makes the point, and it's a generalization, that women are less inclined spiritually than men, or men are more detached by nature, or more can be more easily detached. And then, of course, some women question that and say, well, there's many men who are very attached and many women who are very detached. And that is true. And the point that Prabhupada's making, he's making a general proclamation that women have a stronger tendency for attachment to family, to home, to comforts, and so forth. As we said, that Prabhupada was once on a morning walk and was in a very nice neighborhood, and he said that if men weren't married, they wouldn't live in these nice houses. They wouldn't desire it. They wouldn't have a need for it. But because they're married, it's the woman who really want these things. So men would tend to live more simply. Of course, you could say many men would not. That's true. But again, it's a general principle. So now the point Prabhupada's making is if we acknowledge that principle, that tendency is there, we accept the general principle, the tendency for women to be more self-centered than men is there, and then the logical explanation that Prabhupada's giving here is that men can help women or help elevate women to come to a position where they're not disturbed or they're acting according to that conditioning. And they're acting more according to their spiritual nature by the association of a good husband who's strong. Again, some women are stronger than their husbands. So in Kali Yuga, things are not so exact, but this is a general idea that women tend to be a little more self-centered than men, and that a man can help them overcome that by his association. Of course, then that means for the man, they have to be strong. Because if this is going to work, then if you have a man who himself is not controlled, then how is he going to help his wife deal with any of her particular weaknesses? So, also I think another thing we need to understand is when we hear these instructions from Srila Prabhupada, he's talking about society in general. He's not specifically talking about the Hare Krishna movement and what goes on in the Hare Krishna movement or what goes on in the lives of people who are seriously practicing spiritual life. He's speaking more in a general way, that generally these are tendencies for women to be more concerned about things in relation to the body, clothing, jewelry, home, food, nice comfortable this and comfortable that, more so than the men. So now let's go on to the next one. If you have anything to say, please say it. Next one. Women need to be protected to keep from being exploited. We've discussed this a little bit, and let's see what she says. According to the Manusamhita, every woman should be protected either by her husband, by her father, or by her grown sons. This is not her, this is Prabhupada. Without such protection, a woman will be exploited. Indeed, women like to be exploited by men. As soon as a woman is exploited by a man, she becomes a common prostitute. So we had discussed this earlier in that often a woman cannot well distinguish between a man's protection and a man's desire to take advantage of her. And oftentimes she's flattered by his desire to take advantage because she doesn't see it as that, but she sees it as his affection towards her, which may increase her self-esteem, her feelings of self-worth, that this man is attracted to me. He thinks I'm nice, or he thinks I'm beautiful, or he thinks I have good qualities. And so, naturally, she wants to, you know, people like to hear that. They like to be complimented. And a lot of times you can flatter somebody, and even they know you're not serious, you could be joking, but still, they like it. They like to hear that. So, therefore, men can exploit women when women don't even know it, or they may know it but not want to admit it and go along with it. And then men take advantage of them. So, you think of a father protecting his daughter from other boys who want to take advantage of her sexually. That's a very good example of protection. And naturally, when a woman is married, the husband is there, the relationship is there, and it should, doesn't always, but it should insulate her or both of them from the opposite sex. That's the idea. And as we discussed, the better the relationship between the husband and wife, the more they are insulated from the attractions of other of members of the opposite sex. So as we know, it's a big problem, very big problem. Married couples, I think the statistics are like 30, 40, 50% of married couples at one time or another have an affair. It might even be as high as 60 or 70. It's very high. So we had talked about this point, the importance of husband and wife having a good relationship. If the relationship between the husband and wife is not good, it can create problems outside, because people who are unhappy with one another in a relationship are a little bit or a lot open to other relationships. They're, you could say, weakened by the fact that their relationship at home is not good, and so they may be very ripe, even if they're not looking for it, but still they may be very ripe or very open to a better relationship when it appears at their doorstep. They may not look for it, but when it comes, it may be attractive to them. So a good husband will protect his wife by a good relationship. That's one way he protects her from the allurement and attraction of other men, just by having a good relationship. So Grihastha ashram is an ashram, and so part of what that ashram means is making the relationship good. Now, the interesting thing is that where some people get sidetracked is if you read shastras, it says don't become too attached to your husband. Well, it actually says the husband shouldn't become too attached to his wife, but it's good that the wife becomes attached to the husband. But ultimately, we should not become overly attached in either case, either husband to wife or wife to husband. And so, in hearing these things, then we think, well, it's better to become detached, and I shouldn't be too attached. But often what can happen is, in the name of being detached, the man becomes attached to someone who's not his wife. So that's not good, is it? Not a good idea, but it happens. So I'm very detached, so I'm not really interested in this intimacy with my wife, and I'm really advancing, yeah, and someday I'll become completely detached. But if that's done prematurely, then often the detached man becomes attached to another woman. So therefore we have this concept of being attached. At least there's the concept of a healthy attachment. That's important. Relationship should be good as far as possible. Now, if both partners are actually genuinely detached and they're happy with it, and they're generally not, there's little or no chance of them becoming attached to anybody else, that's the natural progress of detachment. So that, in that way, it's wonderful. But if we try to become detached before we are detached, we may become attached to someone we shouldn't be attached to. And that is common. Okay. Now the next one is interesting. This is from a lecture, Bhagavad Gita lecture. Okay. Kruna Shakti says, if women are more self-centered, it seems to contradict why they're in the role of mother. It does seem to contradict that. I think, I'll give you an example of what one guru said. He had a disciple who he felt was very self-centered, or too self-centered for her own good. And he told me she needs to have a baby because she's too self-centered. And when she has a baby, it will help her overcome her nature to be self-centered. So maybe that's Krishna's arrangement to help women overcome. If they have that nature to be self-centered, maybe the idea of being in the role of mother forces them to overcome or develop a very selfless nature. And so that's why having children is healthy for them. I can't really say much more on that. And welcome, Julie. Glad to see you. So, I mean, glad to see your name here. I can't see you yet until I get mystic power. And I don't know if I'm going to get enough power to see everybody in this life. But if you send me your picture, I ask you to send me a picture. If you send me your picture, then I'll be able to see you. Email me your picture at mahatmadasa@gmail.com. Then I can see you. I can meditate on you. Okay. Now, women need to be protected to be happy according to their nature. Let's see what Prabhupada says. Prabhupada is in India, and he's giving a lecture, and this is what he says. We are actually to be predominated by Krishna, but we are trying to be predominator. That is our fault. Don't try to be predominator. Try to be predominated by Krishna, and you will be happy, just like woman. As soon as she is under the protection of a big father, a nice husband, and nice elderly son, she is happy, very happy. Or as you say in India, very, very happy. And as soon as she's independent, I have seen practically in Europe and America, there are so many women declared independence, they are most unhappy. I have seen it. In old age, they are very, very unhappy. Young age also. They do not get a right husband, and they are very unhappy. When one young girl sees that another young girl has husband, she becomes, oh, this woman, this girl has got a husband. You see, that is the nature. Yeah, one devotee, women have told me that they feel that way. Sometimes, I wouldn't say it's envy, but it's very close, or it almost appears that way, that a friend may have a nice husband and they're feeling unhappy and somewhat jealous, or maybe jealous in a nice way, but desirous of having a husband. And one devotee told me when a friend of hers had a child, she became upset or envious of her because she didn't have a child and she wanted a child. So Prabhupada's making the point that generally women are not really happy if they're not married, unless by nature they're just this very renounced person. Sometimes you see that certain special women are just extremely renounced. They'll join a convent or they'll remain unmarried even if they're not in a convent, or they'll become devotees and not show much interest in becoming married. So that's there, and that's the exception. But Prabhupada's making the point that generally, if a woman has a nice husband who takes care of her, she'll be happy. And if she doesn't, she'll be unhappy or uneasy or not peaceful or not really satisfied. I have practical experiences. I know women who've never been married or never been married in a good relationship. And it seems like everything else that they do in their life doesn't really satisfy them deeply. Of course, you could say, well, if they were Krishna conscious, they would be satisfied, which is true. But often, we're not that Krishna conscious. Or often, we need the material satisfaction as a platform, as a foundation, to be able to practice Krishna consciousness so that we can become satisfied without all these other things. So, interesting point. Okay. Anyone have any questions out there in Krishna.comville? I mean, Krishna.com Puri. I mean, Krishna.com land. If you have any questions, ask away, comments. We're missing Bhakti and Carol. She always has all the comments. Okay, let's see what's... I'm missing something. Okay. The next section, women need to be protected as a foundation for spiritual progress. This is from a lecture on the Srimad Bhagavatam, also in India. Let's see what Prabhupada says. So modern civilization is not strictly following the Vedic injunction. Therefore, especially I have seen in Western countries, there is no home practically. There is no homely happiness because women are allowed to mix freely and there is no protection. You know, this concept of free love means your girlfriend could be having sex with so many other men. That's what free love means. So it's not a really peaceful situation for a man to think his girlfriend or wife is out with other men. They are not married, there's no husband. The father also does not take care. There's so many girls who come from broken families and they're unhappy, or they become addicted to drugs, or they become prostitutes or living on the street or whatever. And you ask them about their father and they'll say, my father doesn't care about me. And what happens often when you have parents that don't care about you, especially a father who doesn't care about a daughter, the daughter will tend not to care about herself, or she'll tend to seek love from other men who want to exploit her sexually because she feels so deprived. It's true. It's just this, the psychology. It plays out all the time. So that's why it's so important for women to be protected and loved by a father, because then they'll look for the similar kind of love in another man. They won't just allow a man to take advantage of them because they're so needy for affection that they didn't get from their fathers. As soon as the girl becomes 15, 16 years, she goes away. Therefore, I have practically seen there is no home, there is no peace in the Western countries. These are very important things, that soft-hearted women, vama swabhava, they should be given protection. They should be trained up how to become faithful wife, affectionate mother. Then the home will be very happy. And without happiness, we cannot make any spiritual progress. We must be peaceful. This is the preliminary condition. This is such a nice point. Prabhupada's saying, if your life in general is not peaceful, then you don't have a foundation to build spiritual progress. So of course, we often would say, well, if you take to spiritual life, you'll become peaceful, which is true. But Prabhupada's making another point here, that often you need more than just taking to spiritual life. You need a foundation in your material life that creates peace. So he's saying it's natural that women want to be protected. And if they're taken well care of, if they have a nice home, nice family, they'll be peaceful. And then that becomes the perfect foundation for their spiritual practice. Just as we all know, if we're too disturbed by external situations, it's difficult, sometimes impossible, to practice Krishna consciousness. Even I was reading last week, a Prabhupada was talking about how hard people work and how, because we're working so hard, it makes it difficult to practice spiritual life. So in one purport, I believe it was a purport in Bhagavatam, Prabhupada said, We should not work more than 8 hours a day. So it's just disturbing to the mind to work too much, and it creates a problem for our spiritual life, because then we're disturbed. Just work, 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 accumulate more, work, work, work. Mind, especially if you're working at something that's not really deeply satisfying or inspirational, then it can become very disturbing. And then it just becomes a disturbance for your spiritual life, because you're not happy. And it can throw you into the mode of ignorance, and then you don't really want to try. I mean, I've seen this happen. Okay, we're going to read the next one. The ultimate protection is in Krishna consciousness. This is from a lecture on the Bhagavad Gita from New York in 1966. Interesting. Here in the Bhagavad Gita, he surpasses all these formalities. Lord Krishna surpasses all these formalities. He is giving facility to everyone. This must be the verse where Krishna is saying, doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman or what caste you come from, you can achieve the highest position in Krishna consciousness. So the Prabhupada is saying he's giving facility to everyone, meaning anyone can reach the highest position of spiritual life. Never mind what he is. In the social structure, you may consider that woman is less intelligent or Shudra or less purified. But in spiritual consciousness, there is no such bar. Here Krishna accepts everyone. Either you become woman or you are Shudra or Vaishna or whatever you may be, that doesn't matter. If you simply take to Krishna consciousness, the Lord is there. He will give you all protection, and gradually he will help you. One who is in Krishna conscious platform, he is already in the liberated platform. So, I remember many times single women or women who had difficulties in their marriage would write Srila Prabhupada. And sometimes in my assessment of their situation, there was really no answer to their situation, because either their husbands had left them pregnant or left them with a small child, or their husbands were violent with them, or their husbands were addicted to drugs or alcohol, or their husbands were cheating, or their husbands had girlfriends. You know, it was one of those situations where there was really nothing Prabhupada could do or say. And in those situations, when he saw how disturbed those women were, and he saw that there was really nothing he could do, because the ideal situation that would solve that problem is to have a good husband. But they didn't have a good husband. Either they had no husband, or they had a husband who was harming them, either physically or emotionally, or perhaps spiritually. And so Prabhupada would just say, chant Hare Krishna, take shelter of Krishna, and everything will work out. So then he was taking this problem to another position, to the level of consciousness, to the level of, now what do you do when externally you can't do anything? So here, what we've read previously, we're saying women should be protected. This is the ideal situation for them. If they are protected by a father, husband, or son, they'll be peaceful. If they're peaceful, they can execute their Krishna consciousness. If they're not, they'll be disturbed, and it will be difficult or impossible to practice spiritual life. And now we're taking it to the situation, well, what if it's not ideal? So then Prabhupada takes it to another level, which is ultimately the solution, and the only answer that he could give is, take shelter of Krishna. Now, externally, things are not going well. So, yes, you should be protected. It's not happening. What can you do? Take shelter of Krishna. Sometimes Prabhupada said, make Krishna your husband. Let him be your husband. He's the husband who won't let you down. He will also protect you. Chant Hare Krishna, depend on Krishna. Everything will be okay. So, in the realm of consciousness, still a woman who is not protected could be peaceful, could be happy, if she fully takes shelter of Krishna. And Krishna will give her that peace. Krishna will give her that protection. And she can have that relationship with Krishna. You're my protector. That's one of the symptoms of bhakti, of surrender, to know that Krishna will always maintain me. Krishna will always protect me. Have that faith. So that's the ultimate solution. Because now you see in Kali Yuga how many women have really good husbands. Even how many women devotees have really good husbands. There's a lot of women who don't. So then what are they going to do? Or they have good husbands and the husbands later leave Krishna consciousness, or they don't leave, or they give up their spiritual practice, or they could be married, have a nice marriage, and all of a sudden the husband becomes attracted to another woman. It's just common. So what to do? Ultimately, where's our shelter? Where's our ultimate protection? Because you could say, it's like Prahlad Maharaj says, he says, well, you can have the best doctor and still die. You can have money and still die. You can try to protect yourself in so many ways. And ultimately, it's up to Krishna. So we can also see things from that point of view. Yes, that ultimately, Krishna is the real protector. And can a husband really protect me? So there seems to be some paradox here. So Prabhupada's making both points. Yes, on a certain level, the husband can. On a certain level, nobody can protect any of us but Krishna. So, now, any questions on protection from any of you out there? Are you out there still? Did I lose you all? I haven't got any comments from you. We can read more things if you would like. Give me a signal. Listening intently. Good. I'm happy. This is good stuff, isn't it? Okay, as some of you know, I had given a class on sexual purity, and often in the class on sexual purity, question comes up that Prabhupada says we shouldn't engage in illicit sex. At least those who take initiation take vows of no illicit sex. So the question comes up, well, what does that mean? Is there a strict definition, or is there a broad definition, or are there two different definitions depending on individuals and situations? And is there any leeway in those definitions? And can we really follow those strict definitions? And if we can't follow, then what do we do? So I did a little research to see what Prabhupada said about illicit sex. And I thought we could read a little bit and discuss, because, of course, this is a really big issue in Krishna consciousness. And it's, I don't want to say it's controversial, maybe that's not the best word, but I think it's better to say it's something that's not discussed a lot. It's kept very private. And it's, in my opinion, something that needs to be discussed more. As one devotee said, we all live in our own world, fighting our own problems. And it's very assuring, as well as healthy, to bring those problems into an assembly, or at least one person, or into a group, and bring them out and look at them and see them, so we don't feel so alone in dealing with them. And this is one area where many people feel alone and feel very unsuccessful at accomplishing. So let's look at it. Kremlin! You didn't tell me you were here. Okay, Kremlin, protect all those girls in your class. They need it. You should have a special session for all the girls in your class. Kremlin teaches in college, right? You should have a session for all those girls and let them know that these boys are after them and they should be careful. Okay, this is from Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is in regards to restraint, or this idea comes up that when Prabhupada says no illicit sex, and for many people it seems that this is really impossible. Like you can't really perfectly restrain yourself, just because the nature of the body and the impulse of the body, especially when you're young. So it seems like I can't restrain myself, so how do I understand it, or how do I do it, or where do I go? What's the deal on this? The Prabhupada says, therefore we first advise all the disciples in our Krishna consciousness movement to avoid illicit sex, which is the beginning of all abominable life, and which is followed by meat-eating, gambling, and intoxication, one after the other. Of course, restraint is very difficult, but it is quite possible if one fully surrenders to Krishna, since all these abominable habits gradually become distasteful for a Krishna-conscious person. That's very interesting, because when we're attracted to something, then it's very difficult to see how that activity could be, as Prabhupada says here, abominable. We don't have that angle. All we have is the taste for it and the pleasure we're getting from it. So that we look at illicit sex and we say we want to restrain ourselves as far as possible. And then Prabhupada is saying, yes, it is possible. At the same time, it's difficult. And the Prabhupada acknowledges that many times. It's possible, but difficult. And then he's explaining here, well, how is it possible? Well, here's a solution, not easier said than done. Restraint is very difficult. Of course, restraint is very difficult. Prabhupada acknowledges that, which is an important point. We also acknowledge it by our own experience. Restraint is very difficult. But it is quite possible. And then Prabhupada could have said, but it is possible, but there is a chance. Some people could do it. Give it a try. You might get lucky. He doesn't say that. He could say, restraint is very difficult, and if you get lucky, you could do it. Restraint is very difficult, and if you're a rare person, you could do it. Restraint is very difficult, and if you've been a brahmacharya for the last 10 lifetimes, you have a good chance you could do it. He doesn't say that. Fortunately, he doesn't say that. Of course, restraint is very difficult, but it is quite possible if one fully surrenders to Krishna. Because what happens, what happens when one fully surrenders to Krishna? All these habits become distasteful. So now you think about that. What's the easiest way to restrain from something? Well, the easiest way would be to become disgusted with it. Wouldn't it? Because if you want to give something up, if you become disgusted with it, it's pretty easy to give up. You don't have to fight with it. So Prabhupada's saying, if we're fully Krishna conscious, then intoxication, illicit sex, meat-eating, gambling becomes distasteful. Not just intoxication, and not just meat-eating, not just gambling, but also illicit sex becomes distasteful. And that's how Prabhupada said we can understand if we're advancing, because if we're actually advancing, we're getting more of a taste. And as we get a taste, we become more detached from bodily pleasures. So, this week I've been having a thought, and the thought is along these lines of how difficult it is to control one's sexual desire, sexual appetite. Especially, Prabhupada says, no man should ever think himself liberated in the presence of a beautiful woman. So I was thinking, you know, sometimes a man sees a woman who's extremely attractive and he just kind of loses his mind for a few moments or longer. And he thinks, oh, this woman is, she's so attractive, she's so nice, I just like looking at her, I just like being with her. I just feel good being around her. It's like talking to her. So he becomes enamored. And then he thinks, it's so hard. It's so hard to become detached. And Prabhupada is making that point. But there's another point that Prabhupada makes. He said that traditionally in cultures, they were set up in such a way that the interaction between men and women would be minimal. So then men wouldn't be subjected to situations in which these attractions could be allowed to fester or grow. In a society like ours, it's very difficult because there's so much intermingling, and because of the way people dress, and because of the vibes they send out. You know, in societies where girls are trained to be chaste, they don't send out sexual vibes. They kind of send out vibes like, don't look at me. Don't get any ideas. But in our society, it's much different. And they're very open. Women and men are very open with one another. They send vibes. So then we look at that and we say, well, you know, I could understand maybe controlling myself in a traditional society where I wasn't really intermingling much, and men and women were much more removed, women dressed differently. But how about this society? So Prabhupada's saying, he's dealing with that, and he's saying, very difficult and quite possible, but you have to fully surrender to Krishna. So to the degree that we're not surrendered fully, to that degree, it's likely we're going to have difficulty. And Prabhupada's not giving a lot of leeway for gray area here. So, now there's a point here, and I'm not sure I understand it. Oh, Kremlin says, in my post-grad days, I interviewed many monks and priests in the Orthodox and Catholic traditions. Celibacy, including self-abuse, is absolute. That is probably why there is a noticeable time before one is a monk or nun. Should I tell you a joke? No, I better not say it. It's a Catholic joke. I might get in trouble. A devotee came up with it today, and it's really good. If you send me an email, I'll tell it to you. Okay. So let's go to the next one. Household life is not a license for legalized prostitution. This is from a lecture. Just like I have several times said, the marriage is sense gratification, sex life. But somebody may say, they say that marriage is legalized prostitution. It may be. You see, he's saying somebody might say that. Well, if you're going from the life, particularly a life of celibacy, into the life of marriage, then somebody could say, well, now it's legalized prostitution. I'm allowed to have sex. So Prabhupada's saying, it may be, but still there is some control. Although it is called legalized prostitution, there is no difference between prostitution and married life, but there is some control. So obviously, they are simultaneously one and different, if you're looking at it from a very strict platform. Then you could say, yeah, okay. A man is enjoying with his wife, so in a sense, that's prostitution. Of course, we don't look at it as prostitution, but Prabhupada's just kind of throwing this idea out that some people say that, so he's going with that idea. Okay, if we want to go with that idea, okay. But there is some control. You become responsible. Responsible life, you can make advancement. So it's not just prostitution. There's restraint. You have sex to have children, that idea. By responsible life, they can make advancement. Irresponsible life will not help. Our tendency for sense gratification is controlled. Therefore, it is called grihastha life. License. Grihastha life means a license for sense gratification. But we must know that sense gratification means material life. It may be systematic or not systematic. Sense gratification means material life, but our aim is to transcend this material life and come to the spiritual life, platform of spiritual life. That is required. So there are so many processes. So in other words, he's saying that gradually the point is to become more and more detached from sense gratification, of which sex life is primary or foundational. And, you know, generally people say, you know, sex is wonderful and what's wrong with it? And then we come along and say, well, really it's just for procreation. And they say, but nobody can do that and that's very strict, or maybe that's for initiated devotees. But it's interesting, when Prabhupada talks about it, he doesn't just talk about it for initiated devotees. He talks about it for everyone. Of course, in a Varnashram society, you wouldn't consider that everyone would be able to do that. The lower classes of people wouldn't. But some restraint is necessary. That's what distinguishes us between animals. There are so many processes, Prabhupada. Yes, that is bhakti yoga. In this ordinary yoga system, as it will be explained in this chapter, one has to strictly follow the life of celibacy. But in the bhakti yoga system, the whole idea is that you have to fix up your mind in Krishna. So whatever your position, household or life does not mean to indulge in sex enjoyment. A householder may have wife, may have sex, but that is for having children only, that's all. A householder does not mean he gets license to legalize prostitution. That is not householder. So Prabhupada was very strict. Now, many people will hear this and say, can't do it. This is not realistic. What is he talking about? What he's talking about is detachment. If you can't do it today, you work towards it. That's what he's talking about. That's what it's for. Yeah. Chastity and marriage. And it is possible when... I mean, you have to understand the context in which Prabhupada is speaking here. He's speaking in the context of devotees being fully engaged in serving Krishna and being fully engaged in giving Krishna to others. And then in that state, he's talking about, yes, you can become detached. Because of your happiness in Krishna consciousness, because of your absorption in Krishna consciousness, then sexual attraction becomes something less. So then it's possible. Okay, would you like to read one more? We have 4 minutes. This is entitled, well, we're going to read it even if you don't like it. This is called The Definition of Religious Sex. This is probably not making everybody happy. I can hear some people complaining. Okay, Manjesh is going to have me read it. I can hear some people complaining. But. Well, I don't know about the buts, but we will read what Prabhupada has to say. Householder can simply have sex life to beget nice children. That's all. No more. That is household life. Completely controlled. Householder does not mean whenever he has got this machine and he can use it. In other words, it's not a license for unrestricted sex. Householder, husband and wife, both Krishna conscious, engaged in Krishna conscious business. But when they require a child, Krishna consciousness, that's all. That is also voluntary contraceptive method. One or two or three children, that's all, no more. Doesn't sound like much fun, does it? So householder life does not mean sex life without any restriction. But for spiritual life, one who wants to advance in spiritual life, either you accept this bhakti yoga or ashtanga yoga or jnana yoga, sex indulgence unrestricted is never there. Sex indulgence means you have to come back again. If you try to enjoy the senses, that is the materialistic way of life. The traditional yoga system, celibacy, is the basic principle of yoga. Materialistic way of life is that I have got nice senses. Let me enjoy the senses to the fullest extent. That is materialistic way of life, just like cats, dogs, and hogs. The hogs, whenever they are sexually inclined, they don't care for whether it is the mother or the sister or the this or the that, you see? That is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam Nayam Deho Deha Bhajam Niloke Kashtat Kaman Arhate Vidbhujam Je. Vidbhujam, vit means stool and bhujam means eater. So the stool eater's sense gratification is not meant for the human form of life. Stool eater means these hogs. The hogs' sense gratification is not meant for this human form of life. Restriction. Therefore, in the human form of life, there is marriage system. Why? What is the marriage? What is the marriage and prostitution? Marriage system means restricting. Marriage system does not mean that you get a wife. Ah, without any payment, you go on unrestricted sex life. No, that is not marriage. Marriage means to restrict your sex life. He'll hunt for sex life here and there. No, you cannot do that. Here is your wife, and that is only for child. It is restriction. Now, we hear these things and we think, oh my Govinda, how can anybody do this? This sounds like it has come out of the dark ages, that sex only for children. And once you have 1, 2, 3 children, that's it, and you stop. All we can say is this is what Prabhupada's saying is the goal. That's what he's saying. Human life is meant to achieve this position. And he's, you know, so you could say, well, at least if I keep it within marriage, that's something. That's true. That is something. It's better than not keeping it within marriage. But the goal is to keep it within marriage only for having children. That's the goal. Now, someone may say, but if I do that, I'll become so upset that I'll go off and run to a prostitute, or I'll run to somebody else's wife or another woman. So obviously, you shouldn't do that. And obviously, there may have to be some compromises for some individuals on their path to gradual improvement. But at least we see that Prabhupada is very strict or very direct about what he means or expects of Krishna conscious householders. So it depends how Krishna conscious we are, or you could say it depends how Krishna conscious you want to be, depends what you're capable of. But remember, the first thing we read was Prabhupada said, it is quite possible if one fully surrenders to Krishna. So that's something to keep in mind. So we're going to end now. We are going to end on time. This is revolutionary. And I think the fact that Bhakti and Carol's here may have had something to do with ending on time, because we tend to have these lots of questions and discussions. So thank you very much, one and all, for attending. I hope you got something from this. And we're going to read a little more next week. We're going to continue reading what we're reading now to understand a little more about the position of household life in relation to sex. So thank you, everyone. Hare Krishna, we'll see you next week, and have a good evening. And all glories to Srila Prabhupada.